Hello, and welcome to Southern Living Magazine, brought to you by OWL Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Angela Odie, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the April 2019 issue of Southern Living. Please enjoy. From the Southern Journal, driving me crazy, why my know-it-all truck is giving me an inferiority complex, by Rick Bragg. I'm afraid my pickup truck is smarter than I am. It used to be that a truck was just a truck, just an engine that left a little oil slick on the parking lot of the A&P. Mine had a transmission that growled like a dog every time I went from second to third and a radio that offered only AM and dead silence if I could scrounge around on the floorboard amid the brake fluid cans and Grapico bottles to find the missing knob. I could, as a backup, spin the dial by carefully placing the blade of my pocket knife into the tiny slot on the post the knob was supposed to fit onto, but after stabbing myself a half dozen times, I gave up. Those trucks were as dumb as pine knot. They were brutes intended for hard, thankless manual labor, but at least they never made me feel intellectually inferior. I got a new truck a few weeks ago for the same amount of money I spent on my first house. Even though I'm now in danger of debtor's prison, at least I can arrive there in style. Alabama does not actually have a debtor's prison, but at the rate we're going, it could happen any day. Maybe they'll just drive me over to our neighbor, Georgia, which some say was founded as a penal colony. They have experience at that sort of thing, but I digress. I settled on a truck that's so pretty people just stop and look at it in parking lots. At the dealership, I slid into the new leather and fired it up. The big V8 engine rumbled, and we were down the blacktop in a glorious glide. Glorious, till it began to lecture me. Every time I strayed near the center line, it beeped me, and not one subtle beep, but a loud, shrill, condescending alarm, as if just a split second of lost concentration were a mortal sin. I wrenched the wheel back in the other direction, and it lectured me again. Now understand, I was not creating carnage or cleaning out the ditches. I only strayed, just a little bit. I can live with this, I said to myself. But the more I tried to hold it dead solid perfect in the road, the more it weaved, until the truck, that harpy, was beeping more often than it wasn't. Finally, a warning light lit up the dashboard. It showed a steaming cup of coffee and blinked the words, and I'm not making this up. Perhaps you should take a break, or something to that effect. I thought my truck thought I was sleepy or maybe drunk. I expected it to shut off the engine and steer me to the curb. Instead, it beeped for another 100 miles and offered me, snobbishly, 3 dozen cups of coffee. All in all, it is a fine truck. It's silvery blue with metal flakes and a dove gray leather interior, and in the sun, it even sparkles. You see, I can live with a truck that's prettier than I am. When I look in the mirror, not once has it flashed the words, "Son, you've really let yourself go." Happy place. Decorator Whitney McGregor's home makeover advice. Skip the big design plan. All you need are the things you love and the willingness to try and fail. By Deb Schwartz. When Whitney McGregor and her husband Tommy went house hunting in the historic North Main area of Greenville, South Carolina, they discovered they didn't have a lot of decisions to make. They needed to move quickly, and there were only 3 properties available. "So we just picked our favorite," says McGregor. They love the cottage's coziness and traditional style, and the large yard, side screen porch, and recently added back deck made the home feel larger than its actual 1,400 square feet. The previous owners had decorated it in a staid style, but McGregor, an artist turned self-taught designer, saw an opportunity to create a polished and vibrant home without getting into major renovations. The 1940s-era house became a laboratory for McGregor's design experiments, which routinely called on her background in painting and sculpture. She auditioned 4 different paint colors in the dining room and shuffled countless pieces of furniture in and out of various rooms in search of the just right arrangement. "I do my own spaces pretty differently than I do other people's," says McGregor, whose style runs from French antique to mid-century modern. "I didn't really have a plan up front. My idea was just to take the next right step. The living room didn't come into focus until she took a beloved scrap of wallpaper she had carried around for months and tucked it behind a red and green painting. That aha moment laid the foundation for the room, and the rest of the house followed, evolving into a true passion project filled with her favorite patterns, hues, compositions, and objects. I instruct clients the same way. If you love it, do it, she says. By bending rules and taking risks, McGregor created a singular space for her family to call home. Take a cue or two from her freewheeling decorating approach. Keep pricey pieces neutral. McGregor loves colorful art, accessories, and wall coverings, but tends to stick with neutral shades for investment items, such as sofas and other large upholstered pieces. Case goods, like sideboards and china cabinets, dining tables, rugs, and flooring. This strategy not only keeps things from, as she says, looking like a circus, but also offers flexibility when her tastes and circumstances change. Play with similar patterns. Sprinkling the same pattern throughout a room, on throw pillows, curtains, etc., is an old decorator's trick. Scattering patterns that are similar in scale, motif, or color, but just a little different, keeps things interesting and really wakes up the room. For inspiration, see the florals in McGregor's daughter's room or the mini diamond shapes in this picture. Art advice. Display like with like. A vertical grid of same-size photos adds order to a busy space. Topped with bold accessories that tie into the rest of the room, stacked IKEA cabinets fit right alongside more traditional pieces. Art advice. Frame a blank wall. An architectural detail, such as molding, can add interest to a room. For plain drapes, she shops at local fabric stores for deals on solids like silks, linens, and cottons. Art advice. Spotlight a houseplant. An acrylic plastic shelf brings a modern contrast and elevates a basic fern. Call a carpenter. Big kitchen improvements, like the solid wood cabinets, the stained butcher block countertop, and the rustic shelves, were all done by a trusted carpenter. Not only did McGregor get the retro-style kitchen she wanted, complete with old-school hardware and laser-cut metal front cabinets, but she also saved money. A thorough number crunching, including labor and materials, revealed that this route was cheaper than working with a big box store. Maintaining the penny-pinching efforts, McGregor's all-white dishware collection combines French antiques and kid-friendly bargain basement pieces. Collect carefully. For both her clients and herself, McGregor buys art before she chooses furniture, and then tucks it away until she finds the right spot for it. But that doesn't mean she shops willy-nilly. I am ruthless about what I select. I must love it. There's no, well, this'll work and it's super functional, so I'm gonna get it mentality, she says. Trained as a fine artist, she collects prints and pieces from antique stores, local artists, and online sources. 20by200.com is a favorite of hers. Once a room is almost finished, she adds art as one of the last layers. To give the kitchen a warm, cottagey feeling, McGregor installed cross-fill tiles in a checkered pattern and added tongue-and-groove pine plank walls to match those in the laundry room. Art advice. Hang with ribbon. McGregor's mom, a dressmaker, created this pretty, now repurposed, sash. This bed, which cost $300 at an estate sale, was reupholstered in a synthetic raffia. If you love it, just get it. How does she know when to buy something? It's a visceral reaction. I source for clients constantly, so I see a lot of stuff. I've had time to fine-tune my ability to walk away from things that are just so-so, she says. If I'm unsure, then it's a no. Whenever there's a slight hesitation, I will sleep on it. And if I'm still thinking about it the next day, which isn't likely since I have the memory of a goldfish, then I'll go back and get it. Case in point. Years ago, McGregor fell in love with a lush red and green floral wallpaper that was $10 a yard. At the time, she had no idea how or where it would work, but she snatched it up and waited for the right space to present itself. It ended up being perfectly suited for her bedroom. Tablecloths are really storage capes. In a pinch or on a day-to-day basis, a glamorous tablecloth can hide a multitude of sins. From stacks of books which lurk beneath McGregor's bedside table, to kids' toys and games, stowed under a cheery marigold print in the hallway. Whether tailored or free-flowing, they also offer visual variants in a room that has multiple pieces of leggy furniture. Art advice. Splurge on the frame. Custom framing with a mat that's the right size and color makes all the difference, says McGregor, who suggests consulting locally owned shops, which are often staffed by artists. Lily Grace's first big girl bed is made of two estate sale twin headboards joined together and recovered in yellow velvet. Find a balance between mom and decorator. A posh kid's room is no great victory if your child can't stand it. McGregor would love to replace the old white Dixie dresser found on Craigslist that's in her daughter's room, but 8-year-old Lily Grace is so besotted with the piece because it's sized just right for her that the designer has chosen not to take on that particular battle. Instead, she upped the dresser's visual appeal by topping it with an eye-catching piece by a local artist and a showroom-worthy lamp with a floral shade. Art that is hung over furniture feels more orderly and intentional. The South's Best Beach Towns, Tracy Minkin. Number 1, Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, a grown-up beach village. One might argue that it's the beach that makes a place the best beach town, but Hilton Head Island proves something even more true. It's the richness of the town that wins the day, and in this case, the hearts of its 40,000 locals. Let's not dismiss Hilton Head's superb beach bona fides, however. Tucked snugly against the water-riven coast of South Carolina, the foot-shaped island exposes 12 miles of broad, tawny sands to the Atlantic Ocean's rolling swells. All 12 miles are public beach that feel both expansive and inclusive. Several access points include mats for wheelchairs. And with an average air and water temperature of around 70 degrees, that's about as pitch perfect as beach life gets. But Hilton Head is far more than sun-loving fun. First, it is home to one of the great American cultures, Gullah, which evolved from the beliefs and practices of Africans enslaved on and later liberated from Hilton Head's Indigo and Sea Island cotton plantations. In fact, the island is home to historic Mitchellville Freedom Park, site of the first self-governing village of liberated slaves, then called freedmen, in the nation. Set beneath arching oaks on Port Royal Sound, Mitchellville is now a center for touring and education and is emblematic of a welcome surge in Gullah-focused tours, festivals, and cuisine, as well as an increased awareness for the 2.67 million visitors who cross the bridge onto Hilton Head Island every year. Second, and just as important, Hilton Head feels all grown up. The sparkling eco-community, with a serious nod to golf, that real estate developer Charles Fraser carved out amid the island's dense pine stands in 1956, has matured into a collection of gated neighborhoods surrounded by live oaks, magnolias, and palmettos, linked by neon-free boulevards bordered by bike paths, and boasting clusters of markets, bars, boutiques, and more than 250 restaurants. First-time visitors fall in love with Andrew Carmine's local oysters at Hudson's Seafood House on the docks, and with homegrown chef and owner Clayton Rollison's sophisticated and often Gullah-inspired culinary takes at Lucky Rooster Kitchen and Bar. Hilton Head is home to one of the coolest jazz clubs on the East Coast, the Jazz Corner, and the best croissant this side of the Atlantic. At transplanted Parisian Philippe Ferré's Hilton Head Social Bakery. It's amazing, Rollison says about his home island. He grew up running places barefoot, riding bikes, and messing around with boats. There's so much here that's sophisticated now, he says, lingering among the rare imports at Roller's Wine and Spirits, an urbane bottle shop with his friend Tony Bagnulo, who's adding to Hilton Head's spirits game with his own top-shelf Bulrush gin. And that magical mix of mild climate, small-town charms, and cosmopolitan pleasures has built a varied community of young families looking for quality of life, digital nomads who want to paddleboard before work, and creatives like potter Taylo Cook, whose rustic stoneware is decorating upmarket restaurant tables throughout the area. Despite all of Hilton Head's creature comforts, Rollison says you can still feel the wildness here, especially when you get out on the water. He has a point. The salt marsh backside of the island bristles with the private docks and skinny piers, and public marinas shelter watercraft from luxury yachts to skiffs, most of which have shallow drafts to navigate the tide-ruling labyrinth of waterways, ideal for fishing, cruising, and hiding away. Those waters often lure bottlenose dolphins to breach and play, great blue herons to stalk fish, and the Sea Pines Resort president, Steve Birdwell, to take his boat out with his wife, Beth, every evening. We head out and just roam, Birdwell says. We watch the sun go down and sometimes have a glass of wine. They do this every night. Every night, he says. It's just that beautiful. Top 10 Best Beach Towns. Number 1, Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. Number 2, Destin, Florida. Number 3, Panama City Beach, Florida. Number 4, Wrightsville Beach, North Carolina. Number 5, Orange Beach, Alabama. Number 6, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Number 7, Gulf Shores, Alabama. Number 8, St. Simons Island, Georgia. Number 9, Pawleys Island, South Carolina. Number 10, Isle of Palms, South Carolina. Virginia's sweet spot. Horticulturalist Diane Burns brings a delightful French strawberry to root at famed Pippinhill Farm and Vineyards by Vanessa Gregory. Make a date. Situated on the Monticello Wine Trail, 20 minutes from Charlottesville, Virginia, Pippinhill is open for wine tastings and food pairings Tuesday through Sunday. On warm spring days, the heady scent of ripe strawberries drifts over the garden paths of Virginia's Pippinhill Farm and Vineyards. The fragrance comes from the tiny but mighty Marais de Bois, a woodland-style French selection that bears fruit for months and imparts a deep-lasting sweetness on the tongue. When I take people on tours of the garden, I encourage them to taste them, says Pippinhill horticulturalist Diane Burns. It's almost like eating a Jolly Rancher candy. Burns learned about the Marais de Bois from the previous gardener at Pippinhill, who'd heard good things about the berry but had not yet attempted to grow that kind. So, 2 years ago, Burns ordered some bare root Marais de Bois online and planted the first crop. Because Pippinhill is both a vineyard and a restaurant, everything she grows, including heirloom tomatoes, apples, figs, gooseberries, and yellow-green kefir pears, ends up in the kitchen. Luckily, Burns' experiment worked. The diminutive berry thrives in the climate and soil of the foothills southwest of Charlottesville, and their flavor and visual appeal thrilled Pippinhill's executive chef, Ian Reinecke, who started using them in everything from salads to desserts. They're about twice the size of blueberries and are the best strawberries you've ever tasted, he says. And because the plant is ever-bearing, the Marais de Bois enlivens Pippinhill menus from June all the way through the first hard frost of November. The berries also appear in the tasting room, where Burns likes to leave bowlfuls of freshly picked Marais de Bois to complement the vineyard's rosé. Nurturing strawberries and other produce amid Virginia's grassy meadows is a big change from Burns' earlier career as a security officer for the U.S. State Department. I tell people that I used to pack a pistol, she says, and now I'm packing pruners instead. Burns was born and raised in Northern Virginia and switched to horticulture when she settled in Charlottesville with her husband and young children over 20 years ago to slow down. "I enjoy being outside," she says. "I love the connection to the earth and working with the cycles of the seasons right alongside the birds and bees." Once she picks a ripe Marais des Bois strawberry, it will not last more than 2 or 3 days in a cool pantry. This strawberry is such a contrast to the grocery store type, which can be kind of dry and pithy and hollow. Burns says, "Marais des Bois is a really delicious berry, and you don't need many of them because they're just so flavorful." Strawberry rhubarb crisps with sweet and savory granola. The crunchy, lightly spiced granola topping takes a bit of time to make, but it's the star of this dish and can be made in advance in stages. Store the prepared, cooled quinoa and almonds in airtight containers at room temperature up to 3 days. Hazelnut financiers with strawberry jam and lemon puree. Hazelnut meal and almond flour give these little cakes a lovely nutty flavor and chewy crunchy texture. Blanched almond flour, made from skinless almonds, is lighter in color than regular almond meal, but the two products can be used interchangeably. Look for them in the baking aisle, or make your own by pulsing nuts in a food processor until fluffy and finely ground. Strawberry gelato with almond shortbread and elderflower cream. You'll want to make an extra batch of the buttery shortbread just to have on hand for snacking. The dough will seem crumbly at first, but it will firm up once chilled. The South's best barbecue joints. Southerners may not agree on which restaurant serves the best Q, but we are undeniably passionate in our opinions. In this year's voting, our readers delivered an impressive and diverse set of picks. Famous old-school joints are met with a few more contemporary establishments, and their offerings span the many regional styles found across the South. All in all, it's a worthy bucket list for any Southern barbecue fan. Robert Moss. Number 1. Southern Soul Barbecue, St. Simons Island, Georgia. This is a repeat winner for good reason. Georgia-style pulled pork and tangy Brunswick stew, ribs, and smoked chicken wings cooked on hardwood-fired pits. It's all served a few miles from the ocean in a converted 1940s-era gas station with a laid-back coastal vibe and craft brews on tap, the ideal spot for a sunny afternoon. Number 2. Lexington Barbecue, Lexington, North Carolina. Ever since Wayne Monk founded the place in 1962 and began serving traditional Piedmont, North Carolina-style barbecue, they've been cooking pork shoulders over hickory in closed brick pits. Whether you get it chopped, sliced, or coarse-chunked, cut into inch-wide chunks, you are sure to have an unforgettable meal. Number 3. Four Rivers Smokehouse, Winter Park, Florida. In the span of just a decade, Four Rivers Smokehouse has grown from a single restaurant in Winter Park into a burgeoning barbecue empire. Slow-smoked brisket anchors a broad menu at the chain's 14 locations, joined by wide-ranging selections such as Memphis-style pulled pork and California tri-tip. Number 4. Dreamland Barbecue in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. It might have 10 outposts scattered around the South, but the red-walled Tuscaloosa location is our reader's pick, and that's where John Big Daddy Bishop started it in 1958. Ribs with white bread and an orange-hued sauce are the go-to order, and no visit is complete without a cup of whipped cream-topped banana pudding. Number 5. Max Barbecue in Skiatook, Oklahoma. The sleeper on this year's list shares a small storefront with the donut shop and sits just north of Tulsa. Founder Mike McMullen opened it in 1985, and his son-in-law Adam Green carries on the family tradition today. Loyal fans come for the heaping trays of pulled pork and ribs, smoked with hickory and pecan wood on old hickory pits. Number 6. Fox Brothers Barbecue, Atlanta, Georgia. Identical twins, Jonathan and Justin Fox, brought the barbecue style of their native Texas east to Atlanta, and Georgians are much richer for it. Staples like brisket and sausage are joined by a variety of mashups like chicken fried ribs with Alabama-style white barbecue sauce. And don't miss the hickory smoked wings. Number 7. Franklin Barbecue, Austin, Texas. Is it worth waiting 3 hours or more for a platter of brisket, ribs, and sausage? Our readers think so. Prime grade meat, meticulous technique, and lots of media hype made Aaron Franklin a celebrity pitmaster. But there's a reason folks still wait in line. It is some of the best Texas style Q to be found anywhere. Number 8, the Salt Lake Barbecue, Driftwood, Texas. The iconic pit entices guests' appetites as they walk through the door. Picture live oak logs burning beneath metal grates, loaded with slabs of ribs and briskets and sausages dangling down from the hood above. Fans love the brisket. They served almost 1 million pounds a year, but the real stars are the beef and pork ribs. Number 9, Bee's Barbecue, Greenville, North Carolina. Located in a converted country store on the outskirts of Greenville, Bee's is about as old school as a barbecue joint can get. Bare bones, lunch-only place serving whole hog and chicken on plastic foam plates. 5 days a week, faithful customers jam the unpaved parking lot and load up on classic Eastern North Carolina fare. Number 7, Central Barbecue, Memphis, Tennessee. The Bluff City is blessed with a large number of great barbecue restaurants, but Central Barbecue edged out the others to earn a top 10 spot. This Central Avenue location is the original, but there are now 3 others dotting the city, ensuring Memphians a steady supply of smoky pulled pork and big slabs of ribs for many years to come. South's Best Barbecue Joints by State: Alabama, Dreamland, Arkansas, McLard's, Florida, Four Rivers Smokehouse, Georgia, Southern Soul, Kentucky, Old Hickory, Louisiana, The Joint, Mississippi, The Shed, Missouri, Sugar Fire, North Carolina, Buxton Hall, Oklahoma, Oklahoma Joe's, South Carolina, Rodney Scott's, Tennessee, Peg Leg Porker, Texas, The Salt Lick, Virginia, Pierce's Pit, Washington, D.C., Federalist Pig. Beauty and Style, How to Look and Feel Your Best, Instant Classic. The Simple Shift. Meet the versatile, flattering white dress you'll wear all season, by Betsy Cribb. Paisley Seersucker Dress in Classic White, $148, SouthernTide.com. Fan Bag, $114, HatAttack.com. L Space by Coco Bell, Los Slide Sandal in Ecru, $128, lspace.com. One dress, three ways. The right accessories can transform a classic for any occasion. Number 1, Beach Getaway. Comfy cork wedges plus a sea and sky tote for boardwalk strolls. 1, Malena Drop Earrings in Chartreuse, $42, baublebar.com. 2, Perennial Wedges in Natural Raffia, $79, bcfootwear.com. Number 3, Ombre Radiance Bronzer, $34, itcosmetics.com. 4, Large Soft Wicker Weave Tote, $114, hatattack.com. Thank you for listening to today's Southern Living Magazine. If you have any questions or comments about the program, please call us at 210-829-4223. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Angela Odie saying goodbye from Al Radio, and have a great weekend.